Welcome to Muffin Talk. Welcome to Muffin Talk. This radio program is brought to you by the initiative Titipaunamu, Study and Joy. Once a week, I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, religions and beliefs, and the care of the earth. With today's interview, I would like to acknowledge Rod Oram. Rod Oram was my guest in several Muffin Talks. Rod Oram sadly passed away on the 19th of March in 2024. In his obituary, he is described as active for justice, lover of kindness, who walked humbly with his God. We won't do enough until we care enough, and we won't care enough until we have a spiritual relationship with the planet and its people. This is a quote that he also used several times during our interviews. Every time, at least once, he mentioned, we won't do enough until we care enough, and we won't care enough until we have a spiritual relationship with the planet and its people. Here goes the recording of an interview with Rod that was broadcast in 2020. Rod, a very warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Thank you, Rabiata. Very lovely to be with you on air.
Rod Oram is a business journalist who contributes weekly to Newsroom, 9 to Noon, and News Talk. Rod is a member of the Edmund Hillary Fellowship, which brings together people from here and abroad who seek to contribute to global change from Aotearoa. A couple of years ago, Rod published a book with the title Seeking Hope in the Anthropocene. Rod, tell us a little bit about the panel discussion that you were part of on faith and business. You said that faith was a journey for you, has been a journey for you. Can you explain what that means to you?
I think probably my experience is typical of many of us through life, that we start as youngsters, as children, trying to understand the stories in the Bible, trying to understand what we're taught, trying to understand what on earth is going on in services in which we participate in. And as we become intellectually more curious, or we're tested in various ways through life, or we're exposed to new things, all these influences cause us, of course, wonderfully to learn, hopefully, to test, to challenge. So for me, there have been periods where that sense of journey or investigation has been more intense than others. And then there have been other periods which, in a sense, have felt more settled. All the way through this, I've been a Christian of the Anglican variety, both here in New Zealand and then before that in the UK, where I was born and grew up, but also in the US and Canada are the countries I've lived in. And I've always worshipped in Anglican churches in those countries. And I also go through periods of being more involved in my parish or my diocese or my province. And then I sort of take a bit of a breather for a while. This seems to be about a 10-year cycle. And hopefully I might slip in another 10-year cycle. But I'm going through the period at the moment where I am reflecting. I'm still enjoying the worship I participate in. But for me, the very, very big part of the journey these days is trying to understand my spiritual relationship with God's creation, because this creation is our living earth, our living planet, which in turn is our life support system. We are utterly dependent on all those other living forms on the planet for our survival. And yet as human beings, we're doing a terrible job looking after the planet, when in fact the planet looks after us. And so that's a very big part of my spiritual journey these days, but also that flows through then into trying to understand as I read the Bible, I seek an ecological interpretation, a creation interpretation there. And then also in worship, eco-liturgy is important to me. But so these are all relatively new facets of my faith, but increasingly they are the most central part. And one last part about this journey, one last aspect. In all the years I've been a business journalist, which is now well over 40 years, I've never denied my faith. When asked, I'm happy to proclaim my faith. But I've never made much of an effort to raise that aspect, that central aspect of my life. And part of it, I think, was always along a sense that if I talked about my Christian faith, that some people might think that this somehow took the edge off my hard-nosed analysis as a business journalist, and that I wasn't necessarily reliable because I was bringing other factors into my decision-making as a journalist, i.e. the great care for people, and increasingly great care for the planet. So I always felt also I never had anything particularly new or different or interesting to say about faith. Lots of other people have said it far better than I had in the past. And therefore, if I was talking about interpersonal relationships or in a community, relationships in a community or whatever, I felt that I just had nothing particularly new or different or helpful to say. Mm. However, on this question of our spiritual relationship with the living planet, not only do I have a huge sense of urgency about that, which gets me more engaged, but I really do feel that all the faiths of the world have this really central aspect of their relationship, of the human relationship to creation. And therefore, I think collectively, we have a lot to say to people at large. And I find that I want to talk about that in ways that I'd never talked about my faith in the past. So it's a very exciting new chapter for me in that respect, that not only am I learning very fast in this area, but I'm also, in my excitement, wanting to engage other people in that. And those are two big differences for me. So that's how my journey is progressing.
I think that you will like the book by Pope Francis on Laudato Si, where he also talks about this interconnectedness, that we can't see ourselves without thinking about the nature, about the animals, and first of all, the human family. So we are not singular. And I think that's the right direction. We had the other day also a little workshop on different faiths and how they are connected to creation, and all of us care for creation if we look in our sources.
Laudato Si was really a seminal document for me. I thought it was the most articulate way and the most powerful way of bringing so many, pretty much every aspect of the human condition together, and drawing those links. And I was very moved by it, and I felt very empowered by it. And if I had to identify one particular piece of writing or big learning for me in recent years, it is that. And then now, in the COVID pandemic around the world, we're seeing so many crises coalesce or come together or be very interdependent. And it's not just health, it's not just economics, it's not just inequality or the breakdown of society and politics and all the rest. These are very, very interdependent. And again, you can easily go back to Pope Francis's words there. I think they're as fresh and as useful today and as timeless as they were when he wrote them a few years back.
Yeah. And you also recently, you commented on a book with the title, The Future We Choose. And I think it's a great title for 2020. A year of a pandemic, elections, and somehow a growing concern for immediate needs rather than long-term goals such as slowing down climate change, growing together as a human family. Can you tell us more about this book that you commented on?
The book is recently published, and its two authors are Christiana Figueres and Tom Rivette Carnac. Now, Christiana is a Costa Rican and a diplomat, and for 7 years headed the United Nations climate negotiations around the world. So she took on that job after the failure of the Copenhagen climate negotiations in 2009. Her chairing took her through and the completion of the Paris Agreement in 2015. And she has since maintained important roles. Tom worked alongside her very closely, particularly at Paris. And so they've come together to write this book. And the very important point they're making is that we literally only have now less than a decade, because by 2030, we've got to achieve something in the order of a 50 to 60% cut in greenhouse gas emissions. If we are to try to keep temperatures under the rise in temperatures to under 1.5 degrees centigrade around the world. And because above that temperature, we start to see far greater damage and change in ecosystems. And there's a whole bunch of triggers that then happen that cause climate change to accelerate. And therefore, it then becomes largely out of our hands. So that's how big the task is. And so on one hand, the challenge is clear, but on the other, and there are lots of things we can do, but trying to organize people around that, trying to get people confident about that, ambitious about that, remains very, very difficult. So Christiana talks about stubborn optimism. In the face of all of these serious, serious difficulties, we need to, in ourselves, be stubbornly optimistic, know that this has to be done. And so it's literally about what we do and dictates what future we have as a species, as humankind. And therefore, we are choosing a future one way or the other. So on one hand, if we don't do anything and we choose not to do anything, then the climate crisis runs away and becomes very difficult for us and even more damaging to humankind and the planet. But if we choose to act, we can choose that future, that better future. So that's the very powerful title and the essence behind it. And then they take 10 very broad themes through there and explore the opportunities for us to act, but also the huge downside if we don't. And another book out in recent months, in a sense, traverses the same territory, and that's called Hope in Hell by Jonathan Porritt, the British environmental leader. Jonathan is making exactly the same point that we have this decade now, minus almost 1 year. He traverses much of the same territory, brings complementary and different evidence, makes the case in some different ways. So the two books, I think, are very much complementary. It's well worth reading both. And they are very encouraging, but on the other hand, they make it extremely clear how grave a moment this is. So I think they're fundamentally important books and very readable.
And when you say we have so much time, some people, they give up hope because they say, oh, it's the governments, it's the countries. But in fact, it's also we as a single person. And there have been some researches done during COVID-19 when less people were on planes and less people were driving and more people were on Zoom. And so maybe that is like a kind of warning or remedy that was sent to us. So just to remember that if we do change our behavior, there is a positive outcome.
Yes, and it's doubly positive because we don't just get that future we choose and that better future, but in many ways, life is a great deal better for us and for the planet. And I suppose I have this huge frustration that I and others can see that very clearly. And I think we are articulate about what that future looks like, that positive future looks like. I feel that I never seem to be able to express it clearly enough or compelling enough to persuade some people. I'm constantly working on how, as a journalist, I can be absolutely very clear and straightforward about what on earth is going on. But at the same time, to say that is all true, but these are things we can do. You know, this is the way forward for us. And so that's kind of the centrality of my work as a business journalist.
That's really interesting, because the radio program Muffin Talk is also a program that I try to raise concerns, but always with hope afterwards. So I interview people who give hope. And some years ago, I had the chairperson of the Environmental Committee from the Justice and Peace Commission of the Catholic Diocese of Auckland. Mm-hmm. And he presented to me 10 green commandments. I think there are wonderful ways of how you can bring it to people. And if you have alternatives, there's always hope. I thought that you are a person who is actively engaged in spreading optimism. Is that right? Optimism against all odds.
Yes, I hesitate there only in that you have to, I feel it's really important to deliver and inform people in two ways. Yes, it is about the hope, what can be done, what lies ahead that is better, but having to be at the same time incredibly straightforward about the facts of the matter, both how hard this is, but how hugely important it is.
It's always good to think of the trees that somebody else planted maybe 50 years ago, and at that time the person would never have had any fruit, but the future generations, no matter if you have children yourself, but it's different generations will have the fruit of the tree. So it's time to plant now in order to have a tree in the future.
Yes, absolutely.
Your book that I was mentioning that you published in 2016, was it also a very positive and forward-looking book about the three cities?
Yes. What I did was, even back in 2016, this was a period where economies were failing people in many respects. And societies were beginning to shatter, politics beginning to polarize. And of course, at the heart of this was our relationship with the planet. I, as a freelance journalist, I couldn't afford the time or the money for an extensive world tour. So I chose three cities that I'd had a long-term relationship with. Beijing, because I first went there as a journalist in January of 1979. On a Canadian trade mission. And I've never lived in China, let alone Beijing, but I have visited reasonably frequently over the years. So I have had a real sense of what's been going on. And also the economic revival of China and the development of China has been, you know, the single largest factor in all my years as a business journalist. Then the second city was London. Now, I was actually born elsewhere in England, up in Birmingham, but in my teens, I lived part-time in London during school holidays, where my family was, and I was still up at school in Birmingham. So again, and I'd been back to London after university in the United States, and so I'd had time as an adult there working. And then Chicago was where I went to university in the United States, and have kept in close touch with the States. I met my wife at university in Chicago, and we've lived for some time in the US, so we have all those connections. I went to the three cities and said to a wide range of people in politics, in academia, in business, in science, what's the convergence, what's the connection between economy and ecology in your city looking out 10 years? So that was the simple construct for the book. And then in each of the cities, I just wrote sort of essentially four extended essays in each of the cities, looking at various of those aspects. So that was the basis for the book. Again, it was trying to stress what might lie ahead for us in terms of roads we might follow. But very crucially, that term Anthropocene is one from the geologists have given us, because they are looking at geological epochs these big shifts in planetary systems that they can detect going back millions of years. They were deciding in 2015, 2016 that we are now in a new epoch. And this epoch is, they named the Anthropocene after us and Anthropods. We humans are the biggest single driver of planetary change. So we are causing a bigger impact on the planet than any natural system. And I'll give you one very small example. We humans, in our construction, in our farming, our quarrying, and in our road building, you name it, we move physically more of the Earth's surface every year than do natural processes like erosion, floods, washing soil down rivers, and all that kind of stuff. That's one example. Of course, climate change is an even bigger example. We are in the Anthropocene. It started, geologists reckon, round about the mid-20th century, around about 1950, when post-Second World War, we started to see a very big increase in economic activity and population growth and the rest. And if you then track the social and economic impacts against Earth systems impacts, you can see that very clear relationship between human activity and the planet. So we are very much in the Anthropocene. The previous period, the Holocene, lasted about 12,000 years. It was gave rise to agriculture and built environments, started the first towns and cities, and in many ways was an extraordinarily long period in modern human history, 12,000 years, that got us to this point. But now, in less than 70 years since the mid-20th century, we humans have just had this unbelievable impact on the planet. And that's what we've got to sort out. And I'm a firm believer that it's possible for us to seriously reinvent so much of what we do, so we work with nature, not against it. And when we get to that point, we will still have a decent life. It's not about sort of going back to living in, forests, dressed in animal skins and living in a shelter. And we can have a sort of modern life, but we need to make sure that everything we do works with nature, not against it. And conceptually, I can't prove this in science, but conceptually, it seems to me it would be possible for 10 billion people, because that's what we're heading for, would be able to live, in reasonably well in relationship with the planet. So that just takes me back to the question of our spiritual relationship, because I feel deep, deep down that we won't do enough until we care enough. And we won't care enough until we have that spiritual relationship with the rest of creation. So to me, that's the very direct way that I look at all this.
And that can be, that spiritual relationship can be through a religion, and it could be through your personality, your spirituality. But I think that every religion does have a basis on, if you really look into it, that you're asked to care for the earth. And if you say, but going back into living in the woods, I think if we were living in the forests, I think we would live in the forest with a lot more knowledge. And so when we cut down the trees and then move to the next area, maybe we wouldn't do that, because the planet is a lot more populated than when we were living in the forest. And the hope giving, that we don't lose hope, despite all things that are happening, we can always move a mountain by just moving the first step and the next step, and go slowly rather than being desperate because we see the mountain.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Rod, for this interview.
Thank you very much indeed. A pleasure to be with you.
So far, the recording of the interview. We won't do enough until we care enough, and we won't care enough until we have a spiritual relationship with the planet and its people. We are very sad about the passing of Rod and grateful for all his contribution. And here are some events coming up with Titipona More Study and Joy. Our next Zoom events are Bible studies. What do they mean? Join us in unraveling Bible stories and looking for answers within a group. and with Bible scholar Brother Kieran Finn. This will be on Sundays at 7th of April, the 5th of May, and possibly on other first Sundays of the month. And it will always be held at 5 from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock in the evening, and it's on Zoom. Then another series that we are planning is The Mystery of Miracles, Mondays the 8th, the 15th, the 22nd, and the 29th of April 2024, from 7 to 8:30 p.m., also on Zoom. In this series of four parts, Brother Kieran will take a closer look at the miracles in the Gospels of Mark, Matthew, and Luke. Each Gospel tells miracle stories. Some of these stories are the same, but with fascinating different details. For further information and registration, please check out my website at www.studyjoy.nz. Kia kaha and keep safe.
Their old pieces calling in the bonds of love we meet for the